how does an online cult become effective, and how does it create super soldiers and murder? Today we have author Tony Russo talking about his book, Dragged Into the Light. And I love the subtitles, Truthers, Reptilians, Super Soldiers, and Death Inside an Online Cult. Well, that got me intrigued. I hope it did you too. It has every bit of what Truth Be Told loves. Because I'm Tony Sweet with Truth Be Told. Please welcome to the Truth Be Told Studios, author of Dragged Into the Light, Tony Russo. There he is.
Oh, thank you so much. It was wonderful reception I got there.
Right. They always seem to come through. The last time I was dragged into the light was when I pissed my mother off years ago. So that, first of all, that was my memory when I saw the title. But truth be told, we've had many subjects. We've talked about Charles Manson and Bob Crane and all these different murder mysteries and occults and all these things. But when I saw this one, when it said reptilians and super soldiers, I was like, what? This is new for me. So first of all, thank you for being on Truth Be Told. And then can you tell us what Dragged Into the Light is all about? And then we'll get into how you got dragged into writing this.
Sure. So Dragged Into the Light is about an online cult that was run by a woman named Sherry Schreiner. And since it was exclusively online, they got really, really got more into it than maybe they would have if they actually had to show up every Sunday or whatever. And over the course of 12 years, Sherry Schreiner made a special effort to keep her followers on her toes. And she did this by this program of separating them. Like, she would kick people out at random, and then she would, she would make them, say and do things in order to stay in the cult and make themselves better members. And as a result, at least two people died, and many, many more lives were ruined. She would break up marriages. And she would send people into these awful depressions. And she would get them to do it to themselves, which is what is really kind of the key. And, that's where the title comes in.
Right.
Because they would become so invested in believing in her that when she told them, when she essentially would throw them out or she would ask too much of them, they didn't know what to do because their whole world was Sherry Schreiner.
Wow.
And specifically the one that got the most attention, there was a man, his name was Stephen Minio, and, he was having a fight with Sherry Schreiner and Sherry, because Sherry didn't like his girlfriend. And so Sherry said, your girlfriend's going to kill you. And Stephen said, you're a false prophet. And then about a month later, Stephen was dead and his girlfriend was charged with his murder.
Oh my gosh.
And wow. So everybody said, wow, like Sherry must know exactly what she's doing. And diving into all of the craziness, I was able to kind of put together a story that acknowledges the crazy, but sets it aside and takes a look more at the emotional damage that happens. And, for me, the key is always going to have to be accepting that other people really believe what they say.
Right.
No matter how ridiculous it might seem to me, lots of things seem ridiculous to me. I seem ridiculous to lots of people. So setting aside whether they're right to believe it and just digging into that they believe it and why they believe it kind of gave me an in to understand the cult and the whole movement a little better. It's one of the really funny things. I was just talking to my publisher about this. I didn't put the words QAnon in the book at all.
Oh, you
because
did?
I didn't think anybody would understand it. Like when I was starting to write the book, QAnon was
now
the kind
would.
Of this. Oh, that's and so like as it was going to print, January 6th happened, and everybody knew what QAnon was by that point. So I kind of wedged it into the into the introduction, just so I could say, this is and all the things you're going to see are QAnon things. I just didn't want to waste your time trying to explain what QAnon was in any kind of succinct way.
Well, you said that, I was reading where you said that this was something you really wasn't seeking out. This was actually was a suggestion. Is that correct?
Yeah. I was just, when you're a reporter, you're always looking for stories.
Right.
And I was actually working on a different story, and I'm actually hoping to get that book out maybe next year. I've already kind of started to dig into it about religious scammers. It was for a podcast that I was working on at the time, and it didn't have the kind of zing that they were kind of hoping for. And Somebody said, well, there's this lizard killing. And I'm like, I felt like it was just like look at the crazy people. I just didn't want to point and laugh. But then when I dug into it and I saw, when I got all the court transcripts, and then I got the audio, because one of the things that Stephen did was he wasn't really much for typing, so he would send audio messages over Facebook Messenger. So I have these long conversations between him and other members who have been kicked out of the cult. I had hours and hours and hours of tape to go through, but taking the time to go through it really gave me a sense of who everybody was.
Right.
And that was that allowed me to break the story, to break it, not break it like breaking news, but understand what the story was about.
Well, I'm curious, it's always interesting when we hear, even like Charles Manson and all these, cults that build up to where they get so many thousands of followers or hundreds of followers. And in fact, millions of followers.
Right.
And you always wonder, like, how do these people fall for this? But you also have to wonder, where does this person come from to have that influence? Where did Sherry begin her quest to create this? Did she consider it a religion?
It wasn't a religion. It was an interpretation of Christianity. And that's why it was a little dicey. And I have gotten a little heat from Christians saying, why are you calling them Christians? And I'm like, they call themselves Christians. I'm repeating it.
Right.
They think that all the other Christians are wrong. Like, and that happens, the example that I like to use that people more and more likely to know is like the Westboro Baptist Church. They are all Christians.
I'm from Kansas originally, so I know.
They think everyone else is wrong. They don't know why I call Catholics Christians. And so, that's this was a Christian sect. But it was also a cult. And those two don't have to be mutually exclusive. There are lots of Christian sects that are cults. And there are lots that aren't.
Right. Well, I've been to many churches, over the years, growing up in the Midwest, the Bible Belt. I've been to so many churches because I was just kind of a soul seeker, a Sagittarius truth seeker. We were trying to seek out the truth, hence the name Truth Be Told, where, so many churches I would leave because they would always talk bad about other churches. And I was like, well, that doesn't make sense to me. This our word is the only way, and is the only God's word, blah, blah, blah. And so I was just like, okay, I don't agree with stuff like that when people say that to me, especially when it's man. If God,
this kind of goes to accepting that people believe, like, this works for Sherry, it works for the Westboro Baptist Church. If you're standing by train tracks and you see someone who's on a train, on the tracks, and a train is coming, you have a moral responsibility to push them off the tracks. And fringe groups like this, they genuinely believe they have a moral responsibility. Many, I don't think Sherry did. I think that Sherry was a con artist. But many of these fringe groups are either con artists or true believers.
Right.
And neither one is safer than the other. As you were saying, it's always good to leave a little space to move on and say, well, maybe we can learn things from the other churches rather than just complaining that they're getting it wrong all the time.
So, okay, Sherry, there's always a beginning. Can you tell us some about her beginning?
Sure, yeah.
I would love to hear about, you know, where she came from and what was her religion? Was it, you know?
She was a Baptist. Nope, she grew up Baptist. She went to Liberty University.
Really?
Yeah.
Wonder what, did you contact Liberty and ask them exactly how they felt about her?
I wasn't able to get any information from Liberty. Sure. I've spoken with other journalists who spoke with some classmates, right, who kind of remembered her. And she was just, you know, just a regular student. What happened to Sherry was, so she left Liberty after 2 years and she finished her degrees at Kent State in Ohio, mm-hmm, which not far from where she would live her entire life. And somehow during that time, so she probably graduated in the mid 90s. And over those 5 or 6 years before the turn of the century, she was quiet-ish. And then after the turn of the century, she got her hands on the Bible codes, and that was her in. But before that, I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, I was kind of, that's interesting.
The Bible codes are the Bible codes are a whole other thing that I'll get into. But before that, she was in this thing called Prophet Club. And I've spoken with several people who were in Prophet Club, and all of them told me that it was not a networking thing for prophets. But let me just tell you, it's a networking thing for prophets. They don't like that description, but that's the only thing that fits. It's people who are professional prophets who get together and talk about being professional prophets. They don't like, I guess networking seems too, too money oriented to them, and these are people who are already, you know, kind of fringy,
right,
when it comes to asking to be paid to do the prophecy that God gave them, mm-hmm, to do. So they don't like the networking thing, but she was part of that, and she was trying to kind of break into the prophet game. And then she had a little bit of, she was getting a little bit of heat, and then she, you know, bought a copy of The Bible Code by Michael Dresden. And I don't know if you're familiar, I feel like you probably are, but in case your listeners aren't, it was a book that purported to show you how to read the Bible as if it were prophecy. But this guy, Michael Drosnin, he was an atheist, so he didn't believe in God.
Right.
He claimed that the Bible was written by time-traveling aliens. So,
it sounds very familiar.
Yeah, no, the Bible Code was a really kind of big deal, again, in the 90s, at the end of the 90s and at the turn of the century. My grandson has joined us briefly.
That's okay.
So the Bible Code is Sherry's key, because she buys it came out on disc. You know, remember, right, you could buy a disc in the mail and they would, right, mail you a disc and you would load it onto your computer. So it came in a disc, and she just started using that to do prophecy. And that just captured people's imagination. So she would type words into this program and it would give her parts of the Bible. And then she would prophesize. And she had this radio show she would do 2-3 times a week. And it was well listened to, like tens of thousands of downloads. So, and this is, again, at the turn of the century, this is 2006, right, 2007.
Internet, that we didn't have YouTube and all that stuff yet.
Right. She was on Blog Talk Radio, which I'm sure you are familiar with.
I remember them.
I believe they're still up. You can still hear her.
Thousands of people still doing it there.
So. Yeah, you can still hear her. I listened to many of her, a lot, too many of her shows over the time doing research for the book.
But when you were listening to it, did you see more of a transition? You know, because if you've heard because I started 14 years ago, and listening to me and my beliefs, and you'll definitely hear probably a transition of how I feel and how I look at people and how I look at religion and politics and everything else. Did you notice a switch in her, or was she pretty adamant of her purpose?
Well, I think to say that to say that there was a switch wouldn't be, it was close, but not right on the nose. She, and I think if you can find this with a lot of the conspiracy crowd, the people that are just like not taking any information that's not conspiracy information in, what she said yesterday didn't have to match up with what she said today. So from show to show, she could change, and no one seemed to care. It didn't seem to bother anybody, but she was always, you know, again, she was always very QAnon. She was always very into the, you know, blood rituals and the child pornography rings and feces eating rituals and the New World Order. She was huge into that, pretty much from Jump Street. And she would add things, but she would never take anything away. I heard someone else say there's no conspiracy that Sherry Schreiner didn't preach. Like if you've, she was against flat earthers. That was the only thing she hated, the idea. Only thing, flat earther. Anything else? She had her own interpretation on it, but she had no patience for the flat earth crowd.
Of all the things, that's the one.
That's the one. And I think that was probably a biblical choice.
Yeah.
But also she believed in the hollow earth. So you can't have a hollow earth if the earth is flat.
True.
So I guess she had to make her choice. She chose hollow earth over flat earth.
Right. Well, I mean, if the L. Ron Hubbard, he said, if you want to become rich, what do? Is create a religion. There's been a lot of false prophets and a lot of people before her that proved that.
Oh yeah, no, it's so, was it Mencken, right? Nobody ever went broke underestimating the American public.
Right. So when did she start? I know she did a radio show, and you know, and she started getting a lot of listeners. Doesn't mean she has followers. Doesn't mean people believed in it. But you know, because sometimes I listen to things I don't really believe in, but it's interesting to listen to.
I had a friend reach out to me just recently, and he's like, I didn't know you wrote, like, not a close friend, right? But he's like, I didn't know you wrote this book. I used to listen to Sherry Schreiner for kicks all the time.
Oh my God.
And I'm like, yeah. He's like, I never believed a word of it, but it was nuts. Right. So I like to listen to it.
And some people like to watch that train wreck. I mean, they do.
Yes. It's so hard, though. It was really, really hard for me to listen to. So that's her thing, is she converted her listeners to donors. And she was able to do that with Orgone, which is the most controversial, because I don't know if you're familiar with Orgone. Sometimes you don't want to overexplain. So Orgone is,
I'm blonde hair Midwest boy. That's I need some.
When you think of crystals, when you think of like New Age crystals, right, you've seen Orgone. They're pyramids and they've got colors in them, and that's one way to make them. So Orgone was this kind of New Agey witchy thing, and I mean that in the positive sense of witches. And she stole it and repurposed it as a weapon that God had given her to fight the New World Order. And she started selling it. And better than that, and this was her absolute genius, she started encouraging other people to make it. Like, if you can't buy it from me, fine. This is an emergency. The devil's coming. We have to make as much Orgone as possible. If you can't make it, pay me and I'll make it. If you want some, pay me and I'll make some for you, or here's how to make it. And then there was like this cottage industry where a bunch of them were making Orgone and selling them, you know, to other people. So there were many people who had a vested financial interest in keeping Sherry going. And when this all came down, when this all went down, I guess, was her Kickstarter had more than $150,000 in it. And that was the only one people could find. Her Patreon was empty by then, and her PayPal was empty, but people would send her cash. People would send her checks. You know, her PO box was on. She would give it at the end of every show. you know, we've got to get that orgone out there. You know, we got to keep the lights on, that kind of thing. And I think she was doing very well, well enough that, you know, it was her only job, and probably better than that. You know, I think she was doing quite well for herself until it all came crumbling down. Yeah.
So, I know that it says online cult, a cult. So mm-hmm. was it YouTube that really exploded her?
No, it was Facebook.
Facebook did.
Yeah. And that's so people want to blame YouTube for Alex Jones. And I don't, you have to search. Like, if you're searching, the question isn't, what is Alex Jones saying? The question is, what are you looking for on the internet that gets you Alex Jones?
Right.
And that's where I can't hold YouTube fully accountable.
No, I don't for
this. I'm a journalist. I'm a, you know, First Amendment kind of guy. And I mean, you know, I'm not big for shouting, you know, fire in a crowded theater or any of that. But, you know, if you're looking for it, that's the problem. The problem isn't that you're finding it. You know, the problem isn't that, I mean, there's a problem with being exploited, and that's, you know, Alex Jones and people like this do exploit the gullible.
Right.
But they're gullible for a reason. They're looking for more. And I think in the book, I make a pretty compelling case that when the world didn't end as people expected it to after, mm-hmm. A, after 9/11, then B, after 2012, people gave up. They're like, I've been going to church. They've been saying the world's going to end, and it's not ending. I need to know why. And you go to Alex Jones or you go to Sherry Schreiner, and they say, "Oh, the war is going on now." People don't know it. Normies right. don't know that the war is going on, but the devil is here, and we're fighting him. And there are demons running the streets, and we have to do what we can to kill them, or to, you know, zap them with orgone.
No, and I, again, because I'm from the Midwest, I've been to L.A. for 20 years, so I've been here long enough to where I've kind of desensitized to my Midwest roots, even though I'm proud of them. But I also, you know, my parents, my siblings, my cousins are all live there, and I do understand why they look to people like Alex Jones, because they are looking for answers. They are looking for, and unfortunately, you know, it is internet nowadays is that's answering a lot of our questions, because mm-hmm. our leaders are not answering those questions. And
absolutely.
So I do understand why, you know, people like Sherry and Alex, you know, becomes very successful. And unfortunately, power and money, sometimes these people start off on the right foot and believe that they're, you know, they have a voice that can make a difference. But unfortunately, I know being in L.A., power and money does make a difference to a lot of people, and it changes people.
I don't want to ever make any excuses for Alex Jones.
Right.
However, like, at some point, you're in for penny and for pound. Like, as you're saying, at some point, the money is just got to be, well, you know, like, I thought this was a goofy little thing I was doing, and all of a sudden, I'm a multimillionaire.
Right.
And what am I supposed to do? Say, hey, I was just, you know, running a small scam here. I didn't mean,
right.
you know,
right.
So you just have to go even farther. The next project kind of thing that I'm working on is about a guy named Clyde Hood.
Clyde Hood?
And you can look him up. Yeah, Clyde Hood. You can look him up on the internet. There's some really good reporting on him. He's very funny. But he wanted to steal about $100,000 for his retirement. He was a retired electrician. And he made this scheme. It was a religious scheme. That's why he's on my religious scammers thing. And it spun out of control. So he ended up making like $12 million or something like that. And he didn't know what to do with it.
He's like, I just wanted $100,000.
People were sending him money, and he wasn't a money launderer. He wasn't, you know, he's like, no one will look for $100,000. And then he's like, but they will look for $12 million. Right, and so,
right.
you know, and so there's this really kind of comical aspect to that, where This is a guy who wanted to be a small-time scam artist and got caught up in, like, once you get the tenth million dollar in the mail, I mean, you're like, oh, I guess I'm just going to ride this until I can't ride it anymore, you know?
Right. Well, you know, as in most people that that kind of go into this direction, you know, there is a downfall. I mean, there's yes. many, many times. And Sherry, same thing happened to her. So I know we have about 20 minutes left, 15, 20 minutes left. And I'm trying to figure out how in the heck did Sherry, you know, built this online success, you know, people sending her money. She's, how did the reptilians really get into her vocabulary? And then I want to find out the beginning of her downfall.
All right. Well,
because, you know, truth be told. We love our UFO stuff. So,
well, the reptilians, this is the thing. This is one of my favorite aspects of the story. So in conservative Christian, in many conservative Christian circles, there can't be such a thing as aliens, because that would, you know, that would say that there was evolution. And since there's not evolution, there can't be aliens, is the shortest way to put that. But they know that there are aliens. So what else could they be but demons?
Ah.
So Sherry and several people like her, this is a novel to her, believe that these are Lucifer's minions, and that they are in the seats of power. So they, you know, she would put up pictures of like the Pope, you know, with a black eye and say, you know, they cut out the Pope's soul and they stuck a reptilian in there. So everyone who's running the New World Order, which is the giant cabal to run the world,
right,
is a reptilian or somehow promised to Satan. And the reptilian aspect of it is, that's an old thing. I mean, you know, there are stories about reptilians from way back. This idea that there are people among us who are reptiles in human skin is kind of common. So she just, you know, she just gravitated toward that. And she said that not only are there reptilians here, but the only thing that can protect you from them is orgone. So you had to get orgone to protect yourself from the reptilians. And, you know, it's just, and this is where it gets like into a grayer area, because I'm not the one who's going to go out there and say there's no such thing as aliens. I'm not going to go out there and say it's not possible that there are aliens among us. That's a separate issue for me altogether. For Sherry, there aren't aliens. There are only demons from hell who are here to run the world and kill us all.
So that's where the reptilians came in.
Right. And so she accused Stephen's girlfriend, Barbara Rogers, of being a reptilian. And that's kind of what set off the whole thing. That's where I came in. That's where Stephen gets dead and I get in. And I start digging around.
So, okay. So Sherry thought Stephen, right? Stephen?
Yes.
Stephen's girlfriend was a reptilian.
Correct.
But Stephen's girlfriend was the one that murdered Stephen?
Well, Stephen's girlfriend was the one who was there when he died.
Oh, okay.
It is really, really complex. There are several theories about what happened. I will tell you the one that, I mean, Barbara is in jail for third-degree murder.
Third-degree
murder is only in four states or five states.
I was going to say, I don't hear that too often.
Yeah, no, it's between second-degree and manslaughter.
Right.
And I think that she was rightly convicted, because third-degree murder is behaving in such a way with depraved indifference to human life. So, you know, Stephen was depressed, and Stephen had a gun. And she said Stephen put the gun in her hand, and then the gun went off. You know, What we know is that Stephen was shot at point blank range in the head. We also know that his hands were on the gun at the time. We also know that he had been suicidal. Hmm. And so the question off the bat is he a, you know, is this an assisted suicide? Is this a murder suicide gone wrong? Or is this just a cold blooded killing? There's a fourth option that I just finished reading the book and it reached, without patting myself on the back, because I haven't looked at it in almost 6 months. It's not bad. It's really not a bad book. And so I'm telling you what's in it. I don't think it will take away too much from the reading experience, right, because right. There's so much. But Stephen was very interested in the Mandela effect in the last couple of weeks of his life.
Right.
And he was also interested in something called quantum suicide.
What is that?
Quantum suicide, you've heard of Schrodinger's cat. I think right. We've all heard of it. I don't know how many of us understand that. I know I barely do. The shortest version of Schrodinger's cat is that, you know, there's a box and there's a cat in the box and the cat is alive. But if you open the box and look to check to see if the cat is alive, then the cat will be dead. And what many people think that proves is that there are multiple realities.
Right.
But what that actually proves is that we're thinking about quantum physics wrong. And that's why so many of us don't understand it, because, I mean, I don't have an opinion on how we're doing quantum physics nowadays. And so the quantum suicide was a reinterpretation of that. And it says when you pull the trigger, a gun either will or will not go off, but there is and there's a reality component to that too. Like if it goes off, then it's one reality, and if it doesn't, then it's another. And again, that just proves that we're doing quantum physics. We have problems with our quantum physics theories,
right,
as I understand. But Stephen was obsessed with changing realities, and he believed that. So I'm sorry. So if your listeners don't know, the Mandela effect is this belief that false memories aren't really false memories. They're real memories, but from a different dimension.
Yeah.
And I believe, and my argument in the book is that Stephen thought he was going to change dimensions. I think that.
Oh, really?
I think that he thought they would both wake up in a different reality where they wouldn't have to deal with Sherry Schreiner.
So he didn't feel like there was a way out without jumping realities. Or jumping.
Yes, and also it's really important to say that they were stoned out of their minds and also quite drunk at the time.
Got it.
You know, and that when there's a faux marijuana thing called Kratom. I don't know if you've heard of
it
or not.
I've heard of it, yeah.
I think you can buy it in like gas stations or on the internet and stuff like that. He had that in his bloodstream at levels that have been known to be lethal.
Wow.
And he also had like a 0.15 blood alcohol level. Like he was absolutely
he was hitting hammered. It on all sides.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely hammered. And Barbara was a drinker. They didn't do her blood alcohol, so we'll never know whether. But she was a drinker, so it would be weird if she wasn't, if she weren't drunk.
So this suicide, assisted suicide, whatever you want to call it.
death is just killing.
Right, killing. accident. So that was the beginning of her downfall. They actually accused her of having some responsibility because of her teachings. Is that correct?
No, that just kind of shined a light onto Sherry Schreiner. It actually made her more popular.
Really?
Yes. Well, I'll go as quickly as I can, but there was another tragic death in December.
Wow.
Of 2018 that wasn't related to Sherry Schreiner. There was this young woman who was drunk and got locked in a hotel room freezer. Her name was Kanika Jenkins. And the police wouldn't look for her. They said she was drunk, she'll sleep it off. And, you know, the family went and they were like tearing apart the hotel. So they called the police on the family and then they're like, we're not leaving. She's here someplace. And then they find this poor girl in the freezer dead. And Sherry is, you know, Sherry had a theory about it. Somebody was getting her kidneys. And so that's why the NWO killed this girl. And it was just, it's an awful story told poorly. But, you know, what happened, and this is kind of a huge spoiler, is she died. She died before she could testify. Of natural causes.
Is this going to be made into a movie or something?
Well, it's been a couple documentaries. But I don't know. I mean, I'm not making it into a movie. I mean, I will if anybody wants me to. Right. But I haven't made. You know, I don't have those rights or whatever. I'm just a guy who is retelling a story. But it's really compelling for all of those reasons. It's just like, even if you set aside all of the crazy, there's still so much drama and tension just in the people betraying one another and forming alliances and then those alliances breaking down. I mean, Stephen was allied with several people who had also been kicked out.
Right.
There was one guy, his name was Richard Brown, and Sherry Schreiner had told everyone that Richard Brown had died. That he had been a spy for the FBI and that God killed him and threw him into the pits of hell. Richard Brown came out and he said, no, I'm alive and Sherry Schreiner's a liar. And then Sherry Schreiner came out and said, that isn't him. That's a made up person who's trying to make you look bad. Yeah.
Well, you know, what's funny is like you're talking about all this, and also in your title, it says super soldiers, but they don't sound much super soldiers to me. Where did the super soldiers come into play?
Well, Barbara was accused of being all a vampire witch super soldier. They were very interested in the MK Ultra program.
So
they were constantly on the run. They were hiding from super soldiers. They were trying to figure out who was a super soldier. That was part of their.
Is it like the Terminator?
Yeah, exactly. And I don't know how much you've done about MK Ultra, but I heard about MK Delta recently in my conspiracy theory kookiness. And MK Ultra was apparently the plan, and MK Delta was apparently the execution. I saw some CIA files.
Yeah, I was going to say CIA mind control thing.
Yeah, on that. So, I mean, I just, you know, because I'm on the internet, and I wrote a book like this, I follow a lot of people who are also, you know, trying to push, because there are really dark places that our country operates in and that our government operates in, and certainly that our churches operate in. But there are also not. And in the gray area where, no, they're doing, my argument is not that there isn't, my argument is not that the government is not out to get you. My argument is the government is not out to get you personally.
right. The society as a whole, not you personally.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah. Unless you're like have a big mouth and can actually expose them, that then it might be different. But what do you think? I mean, you know, we're in 2022 now. We've seen, you know, multiple types of people that have taken advantage of the masses of people all around the world. I mean, this is not just in the United States. How do we even solve that issue, do you think? I mean, because there's some people that actually, you know, I've did a thing on Jonestown, and some people do come to realization that after a while going, I think this is not for me, and I want out, and they get scared. Some get scared, but how do we stop this?
Closest that I've been able to come describing how to talk to people is, first, you have to accept that they believe what they believe. In arguing whether or not aliens are really demons, it's not a conversation worth having.
Right.
You know, but, you know, just being open and asking them why they want to believe it. Because, I mean, most of what we believe, we want to believe. There are, like, you know, outside of physics, you know, we all operate on faith. Right. But there's, when people get dragged down into like the lower levels, it's because their faith isn't working for them anymore.
Right.
So why doesn't the old faith work? What was missing that made you look for these answers? And I mean, as the, you know, as the pandemic drags on, it's just shocking. You know, it's just shocking at how willful it's become. And that's what, you know, if I can plug somebody else's book really quick, there's a great book called The Story Paradox.
Story Paradox.
And it really kind of changed my thinking after my own book came out on the central problem. And I'm going to spoil his book. So we're storytelling creatures, right? We think in terms of stories. We all say that. I think that's pretty widely accepted. But what this author pointed out, his name escapes me, is that stories need a bad guy. Like, no conflict, no story.
Right.
So we have to find bad guys for the stories that we're living, or we have to rethink the way we tell stories. And that is really, 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 really complex. So when you talk in terms of good guys and bad guys, you know, what makes these people the bad guy? You know, I grew up, you know, in the 1980s, and that was kind of the beginning of the end. But when I was growing up, you could have a conversation with someone you didn't agree with politically, and there didn't have to be any screaming involved.
Right. Yeah.
But it was because I think I said this in the book. I said this someplace. The truthers don't believe in the 9/11 conspiracy. They are truthers. That's how they self-identify. So it's gone from something they believe to something they are.
Yeah.
And once you internalize something, it's like you're asking people to undermine who they think they are, undermine who they think they are, which is a bigger ask than to just face the facts and stop being stupid, right? And so I think the question is, why do you want to be this? Why do you think you are this person?
Right.
And how is being this person making your life better? Because that's always the key. The key is, especially when you get into the vile, you know, conspiracies, the anti-Sandy Hook kind of stuff. Sherry was a big anti-Sandy Hook person. When you get into the, if your religion makes you mean, knock it off. I guess is the best way to put it. But why do you seek the vileness? And that's the question. The question isn't, why do you believe what you believe?
Yeah.
The question is, why do you seek the vile aspect of it?
Yeah. And like you said, I still go back and, you know, talk to, you know, people back there, and they get riled up. But you know, I'm okay with, that's why I love doing the show, because I like both sides. I've interviewed, you know, the priest of the Church of Satan. I don't necessarily believe in it, but I think the more knowledge we know about other people's lives and religion and politics, we can understand each other better, and we can have a better conversation and walk away going, oh, I didn't, you know, you were not as bad as I thought you were.
that's where the story paradox thing comes in. Like, make them not the bad guy. Right. Make them an ambiguous character in your life rather than make them a bad guy in your life.
Exactly.
And I think that would help.
Well, I mean, we just have a few minutes left. I just want to ask, I always call them my co-host, people in the chat room. And this kind of has something to do with what we're talking about. It's about doing with Hitler, of any type of person that has affected millions of people.
Right.
So you can answer you if you don't want to answer, that's fine. And he says, hey, I have a question. Did Hitler really have the Spear of Destiny? And do you think he faked his death? I mean, it's kind of similar, but there's a lot of people out there that do.
I understand that they believe that. I don't think he had the Spear of Destiny. But more important, I don't think he faked his death. I think that, you know, the Russians put the picture out, and it just, for me, the thing about conspiracies are always people who are either being greedy or who are embarrassed.
Right.
Conspiracies aren't, let's just fool everybody, you know, because it serves our evil ends. Like, what is a conspiracy for? I don't know the upside. I mean, if you know about this part of the war, like, the Russians are raping their way through Germany. They're certainly not going to hide Hitler.
Right.
They were really, really angry because they were hungry and they had been at war for a very long time. If Hitler was alive when they found him, we may have seen them tearing him apart on video. It was brutal when the Russians got to Germany. And again, they thought they were justified. They had all these evil people that they were going to go and kill. And, you know, no. So I'd be shocked. If Hitler, I mean, he's probably dead now one way or the other, but I don't believe that he faked his death. I don't believe that he could have gotten away. Like I said, the Russians, take a look at what the Russians were doing. Like, that's one of the things we don't really talk about because it's, you know, because it's an ugly part of history. But, you know, the Russians coming into Germany, I'm sure. Take a look at the Russians coming into Germany. It was not a pleasant time. Yeah,
they were pissed off, like you said, cold, hungry, and like, I want this shit over with.
Yeah. They're like, we're never coming back here again. We're gonna burn it all down. So.
Well, yeah. I mean, Tony, you're great, and I'd love to have you back when you get your next book out. And so you're actually putting this book, Dragged. Let me get you put this up here, Dragged into the Light, onto audio.
Yes, the audio book. Hopefully it will be out before March. I just sent it to the publisher. I just finished it and got it mastered and everything. And there will be another. There's been a documentary you can watch. It's called The Devil You Know. It's season 2.
Nice.
You can find that on Vice and on Hulu. And I'm featured pretty heavily in it. Thank you very much. And there's another one that'll be out on Discovery ID sometime this spring. It's called Caught in the Net, and I believe I'm episode 2 in that, but I haven't heard yet final dates on that.
Well, thank you for sharing the light with us on Sherry Schreiner, and you know, it's something I honestly don't remember, so that it's always good to learn something new. And thank you for doing your work. I always appreciate authors for doing the work for people like me that don't have to do all the research. We can just learn from you. But thank you so much. And you can go to draggedintothelight.com. You can follow Tony on Instagram by Tony Russo. I think you said that's Instagram and Twitter.
Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook. It's like my byline, BYTONYRUSSO.
Perfect. And from a Tony to another Tony, appreciate you. So don't go anywhere. I'm going to say goodbye to everybody. But thank you for being
here.
Truth Be Told. All right, everybody, it's another episode. Thank you guys for joining in. Always thank you for the questions and comments in the chat room. It always means a lot that you guys tune in for us every week. You can always find me here Fridays at 3 p.m. And then Mondays, you have Robert Hensley doing the Minuteman Report, 3 p.m. And then Wednesdays at 3 p.m. with Bonnie Burkett. She does Truth Be Told transformation. If you like that spirituality, guru, shamans, and all that good stuff, you know, she's the lady to do it for you. So until next time, I'm Tony Sweet. We'll see you then. Bye. This has been another episode of Truth Be Told. Thank you so much for watching. Recorded live at UBN Go Studios in Burbank, California. Join us on social media. Facebook, Truth Be Told Radio. Instagram, Truth Be Told Paranormal. Go to Truth Be Told Worldwide for more information on upcoming shows.